Let's pick off where we ended last week with the Apple's movie, The Banker. There's somewhat of a development. There's nothing final or announced yet, but this is the film that is Apple's first theatrical release movie with big name actors in it. And there's this whole like last minute allegation of misconduct from someone important in the storytelling. And it got canceled at the American Film Institute Film Festival. And we wondered, Mayo, whether or not this will be pulled from theaters and if it will ever launch on Apple TV Plus. And there's not yet a final word on it, but it seems to be that it's like, without Apple saying it, that there's been a final word on it, right?
Yeah, it's still unclear, right? They obviously pulled it from the theater release, so it's not coming out on the 6th as it was originally planned for. They never announced that it was officially that it was coming to Apple TV Plus in January, but you know, it was coming to Apple TV Plus in January under the original schedule.
Yeah.
That realistically now that's not going to happen because this film stars, you know, big actors like Samuel L. Jackson and Anthony Mackie, and they're going to want to make it eligible for awards, whether that's this year or next year, because even though some of the award ceremonies don't happen till like the middle of 2020, you have the submission deadlines, I think, are the end of this year. So if it doesn't launch in theaters until next year, then you wouldn't even be looking at potential awards until the year after ceremony, which is part of the reason I think they wanted to get it out before Christmas. But you know, that's looking unlikely to happen at this point. But
it'd be a good Christmas movie if it wasn't, you know, tainted.
Yeah, they're not going to want to burn any possibility of getting awards, assuming the movie does come out, right? There's a big chance it never comes out. But if they do want to keep it coming out, and, you know, Garrett Jr. has refuted the claims, and he said he's stepping back from the project, he's taking his name off it because he just wants the film to get out. He says that there was some family argument, which is why the half-sisters made these allegations, and, you know, who knows what the reality is. But in the interest of fairness, obviously the other person is refuting the situation. If it comes out, if it does come out, if Apple doesn't make the choice to actually release it, then it's not probably going to come out on Apple TV Plus in January because they want to give the exclusivity window to the cinemas again so that it can remain eligible for awards in the future. So it'll probably have to come out, like, say it comes out in January 6th, and then it'll come out into Apple TV Plus in February. We're not going to talk about TV every single week, but this is the launch of TV Plus, and this is their first big film. Yeah. And it is a significant issue that their first big film has been, you know, mired in this situation. And clearly this was a perfectly primed film story-wise for, you know, holidays and Christmas, you know, nice upbeat story about two, marginalized individuals breaking up again from society and building this like massive empire. Again, quote-unquote, based on true events, like these people did exist. It wasn't just some like fairy tale situation. And it's a really cool story. And They even used the banker in like the Final Cut Pro Summit, which is going to tease like surprising new announcements where we thought that they might do some like Mac Pro demos and stuff, but that didn't really happen. But one of the things they did have at that like Final Cut Pro private demo was they actually talked about the banker because it was shot on film and then edited exclusively in Final Cut Pro. So they were kind of showing it off on that angle as well. So, you know, they tried to make the rounds with it, and they were definitely looking for awards qualifications, and it probably, you know, might have won some for it too, but, you know, in this day, it's forever tainted, as you said.
Yeah. Like you mentioned, we won't talk about TV Plus every week. That's the hour before we hit record that we do that offline. But so from the Variety report, they say Apple is delaying the theatrical release of The Banker, originally set for December 6th, with assistance from Bleecker Street. Insiders familiar with the company said it's being delayed as filmmakers review the accusations. And then they repeat the idea that it was supposed to be released on Apple TV Plus streaming in January. And they say, which is also being postponed due to the theatrical release's delay. If you look at the trailer for the film on Apple TV YouTube, it's still there. It's not hidden. It even still says, the description is, they built an empire like nobody's business. The Apple original film, The Banker, comes to theaters on December 6th. So they haven't...
Oh, they haven't even changed the description on the YouTube video.
Nope, it's still there.
Because if you go into the TV app and you go to the Apple TV Plus channel page, which is ridiculously buried, and then you scroll down, and then on the coming soon section, if you scroll along, The Banker's still listed there. On on the TV app, it only ever said coming soon anyway, because it doesn't show like the film dates. It just shows the TV Plus release, and they never officially announced it. So it hasn't changed there. It still says coming soon, but it's not like they've taken it down.
Yeah. No comments in the trailer, but I think that's on all of Apple's channels, and they've got 17,000 likes and 801 dislikes. So that's since November 4th, and it's got 720,332 views. So it's maybe it does seem like it's just gonna, they're going to like address this somehow. It might not be their first film out. It will need to be in 2020 to qualify for 2021 awards, but they're not going to just can this thing because it's not a minor project.
Also, yeah, like realistically, if it was, you know, a smaller documentary about a real life situation, or if it was, you know, like a Sundance project with actors that you'd never heard of, they would have killed this thing already and just got on with their lives. But it has too much weight attached to it in terms of the potential impact on, you know, the theater community because of the actors and the names involved. Like, so they're going to want to, they're going to try for all their might to be able to get it out there. And like the arguments about morality and the situation are obviously heavily weighted against the fact that, you know, this is a big, they were banking on this film, excuse the pun, and they really want to do it if they can. But it depends how, you know, true the allegations are, where they can actually find any like supporting evidence for it and stuff. Maybe they'll take off the based on a true story label just to try and, you know, give and take a little bit to try and appease some people. But if I had to guess, I think they're going to release the film. It's just in what capacity.
Yeah. All right. So we will find out what happens with that sometime in 2020, probably. Let's talk about something a little bit cheerier, which is something that we waited for together, Mayo, and that's Apple's holiday ad. This year it's called The Surprise, and it has an ending message of make someone's holiday. And that's nice. And my take on it is it's better than some recent ones. And it's like my immediate reaction was it's like the sequel or like another version of the really awesome Misunderstood ad, which I think was iPhone 5, where the child was
– it was 2012 or 2013, yeah.
Yeah, where the child was like always on the iPhone, not involved with the family. And it turns out that at the end of on Christmas morning, he was creating – like a little mini documentary of his family and like had that to share for Christmas. And so Misunderstood. This is called The Surprise. And sort of what's the premise here and what do you think about it?
Yeah, so he's very much on a, like a Misunderstood plot line, just with a, you know, flipped in a different situation. So you have the, like the granddad who's, we learned the, his wife has died recently and he's obviously upset about it. The kids are around for Christmas with the family. You can see the mum and the granddad have a little bit of interaction about, do you want me to help pack these things away, like the possessions of the deceased? So you get the, you know, you get the emotional hook, and it, and the kids are just playing around on the iPad. But when it comes to Christmas Day, they're opening the presents, and one of the presents is the same iPad. And at the first, the mum just kind of like laughs it off as a dumb joke, but it turns out that they've made this intricate presentation in Keynote, which has got all the pictures of the family, and it's got a nice video sequence of the, you know, of the grandma that's passed away, and it, you know, tears everyone up, and everyone's really happy at the end because it's, and obviously it's made on the iPad, apparently just using Keynote. I will say, you need some suspension of disbelief to believe that those two like 10-year-old kids produced that entire thing, because it is quite a detailed presentation. Like, you need some decent drawing animation skills to be able to pull that thing off.
But I don't know. We'll see. I'll say more on that later in the topic list. But yeah, I don't know.
Maybe not. Like, some stuff in that was like, it didn't quite have, like, the presentation alone, like what you see on the iPad screen, didn't quite, for me, had the amateurish enough for it to be like authentic 100% in my head, which I didn't have that same reaction with Misunderstood. Like, I did feel like some of the slides were like, this is almost too perfectly made to be, you know, to be done over at night by two children. Like, you know, maybe I'm underestimating people, but
yeah, I think so.
Okay, well, I'm just air my, that was my gut reaction to it, right? I thought the ad of the as a whole was fantastic. Misunderstood, it obviously shares from the Misunderstood plot line, but Misunderstood was, you know, more than 5 years ago now, so there's no problem, you know, rolling it back around in a different formation. I much preferred it to, I didn't hate last year's the Share Your Gifts one with the animation, But I prefer this one by a mile, if that's...
Yeah, me too. Fair, yeah, the part where the granddad, like, waves into the iPad at the video of his, you know, lost wife is like, mm-hmm. yeah, it's really cool. And then also I thought what I do think was pretty realistic was when the kids are, like, showing him how to go to the next slide. Like, yeah. That's such a reality thing. So yeah, I liked that very much. And we were sort of waiting, like looking at when these ads come out in previous years. And, we were like, you know, on the edge of our seats to see it because these are always memorable because unlike a lot of other company ads around the holidays, it's not just like, this is our product. This is what you can do with it. It's like a little mini story, you know, that includes Apple products. And it's certainly, you know, a marketing advertisement, but, there's always like an emotional richness to it that I definitely like. And and speaking of you know, in this whole like TV and ad world, this week we saw that Apple's changing the release dates for some of the TV Plus content, right? For the week.
Yeah. So this week, technically, all episodes of For All Mankind, See in the Morning Show, are meant to be released on Fridays. Like new episode every Friday. That's their ringtone. That's their like jingle. Truth Be Told, we're having episodes every Friday. Servant is a new show launching this week on Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving's the Thursday, so it would be a change in time for them to do that on the Thursday, but, you know, that was like, oh, it's because of the big holiday celebration, they're going to push up the launch by one day, and then I believe in the following weeks it will be releasing new episodes on Fridays. Mm-hmm. But what we didn't know until, like, today or last night was that they're actually also pushing forward the next episodes of C and The Morning Show to Thanksgiving Day as well, so Thursday release for just this week. And that's like playing hard into the, you know, the Thanksgiving. You get everyone around, you get everyone in your house and you watch like some cool movie or something in the evening type of thing. Like, I think it's a really clever little marketing tactic of just, you know, just shifting the schedule by a day or so to play into the, like, you know, Christmas holiday fever, essentially.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing that I would look at as maybe it wasn't like a part of like the big grand plan, but they you know made a call. It's like this will be promotional and like families are together, and then we'll you can share the story of what Apple TV Plus is, you know, or if you're having like a non, you know, like picturesque holiday and you've got time off, then you can just, you know, binge the new episodes of all the shows. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's nice to show that they do have like the adaptability in their schedule to be able to do that kind of stuff, because mm-hmm. you know, Apple TV Plus as a division could be like very strict down, mechanical, blah, 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 blah. But the fact that they're like shifting the calendar around a little bit to, obviously it suits them as well for the marketing reasons, but it, you know, it's like personable and kind of like, there is actually like a human running this at some level, right? Like it almost feels like a programming guide of, you know, made by humans, not just like an automatic release thing every Friday, here's a new episode. And yes, they don't have the catalog or the library of stuff to be able to have like a full week yet of stuff to, you know, roll out every single day, which is obviously the goal, but they're not going to get there for a while. But the fact, just showing the little tweaks from Fridays to Thursdays, you know, it's a nice way to like mix it up and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's cool. I wonder if Disney Plus will do the same thing. We haven't seen yet, but I'm watching Mandalorian, so I care. Tell me about Apple's podcast original news story, which is something that came, I think, the moment after we stopped recording last week.
Yeah, so obviously we heard before that Apple's exploring doing premium podcasts like Apple Podcast Plus that will probably be making original shows, which is, you know, the going formula. Spotify's making original podcasts. It would follow like the TV Plus originals, and it would slot into like the Apple Podcast app as a, you know, premium tier that you could pay for. And along that line, we've seen some new hires. So they actually hired a producer from National Geographic who also worked at NPR, which kind of shows that they're like ramping up into this, you know, content world. So they've tackled games, which they just crossed 100 games on every platform now, by the way. So they had iPhone, iPad, an Apple TV, and now they've just rounded it out, so it's above 100 on the Mac as well. So all four of their platforms now have at least 100 arcade games, and that's fulfilling their initial like promise, right, of having 100 games. And they're going to obviously write more over time, but the initial launch is finished and finished up with now. On TV, obviously they've got a decent strategy going, but they need to, you know, essentially multiply and just roll out more and more content, and we'll see a lot of that come next year. And then podcasts will be their kind of new venture. that is like the next obvious option for their like content services expansion, apart from say like books. Like books is clearly the outlier where they haven't got to, we haven't seen any like hints of them doing a subscription service for books or, you know, additional, you know, services revenue for the books area. But that definitely seems like something they could explore in the future. But the books industry is, you know, very tied down with rights and content deals and stuff. So originals is a way around that, right? So with podcast originals, it's a very natural thing. You raised up an interesting point like a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about this, is, you know, theoretically they could do books originals as well, like just pay or just do what they're doing with TV, right, where they find good authors and they just buy their book rights and just sell them exclusively through some like Books Plus service.
Where it's probably not enough money and realistic to charge a flat rate for access to books, and that the closest thing to that is sort of Audible, which is like pay monthly and you get to basically take with you two digital books a month or something like that. And so it's just not compelling enough to be like the Apple Music of audiobooks, even much less, you know, ebooks. But that if Apple took the sort of TV Plus model and said, we like these authors, we're promoting them with, you know, the Oprah's Book Club, like the, you know, they, as seen in Oprah's Book Club sort of thing, then they could say, you know, basically like, more like the arcade model, really, where they say like this book can be written because we're paying for it up front and then it's part of our service exclusively. That'd be cool. So the podcast and stuff.
As we head into like the bundle situation, you know, just they can just throw all sorts of stuff in there, podcasts, music, some book exclusives, et cetera.
For the podcast stuff, it's, you know, I love Podcasts With You podcast, but a lot of the ones that I like are like very niche and not the like super popular, like high crime stories, you know? This might not be so much for me, but it does make sense that Apple's got this great, big, popular podcast app and everything in there is curated from an RSS feed and nothing is like exclusive to Apple except for like Apple events and like some Apple Store events. So
I'm not worried about like, you know, big tech just coming in and like steamrolling the podcast market. Like originals are a different beast. It's kind of like saying,
thing, yeah.
Yeah, like Apple TV Plus on its own is not going to, you know, destroy the world of television. Like it's just not going to happen. And the same thing will be like the podcast environment. It would be an almost unfathomable task for a company to buy rights to, you know, the top 100 podcasts that exist today. Like it just wouldn't happen because they wouldn't be able to make enough money off it. And that's, for me, the only way I could see them actually like make a closed off podcasting service. Like we've seen apps like Luminary try, but no one bothers because, you know, the shows that you want are not on there, right? And that's just the reality. And so the only way that these companies like Spotify and Apple are coming to the game are by doing, you know, new originals essentially. And that on its own is a nice little like benefit for people that want to listen to more stuff, but it's not going to wipe out, you know, the traditional advertising podcasts like us. And
but like, you know, if you look at the like the Apple Podcast app and what, and like the, maybe it's the browse section, but like what they promote on the face of the like the podcast, you know, store or library or whatever you call it, I don't know. That I mean, there's some very popular things like the Daily from the New York Times and Washington Post's version of that. But honestly, like all those shows are not in my rotation. I listen to very niche tech podcast and like very niche like running and sports podcasts. So
yeah, if you took it to the extreme and like just imagine for a second that Apple could buy exclusive rights to every single podcast on the front page of the featured section of the podcast app, right? Like literally every top show. Even if they did that, there would still be a huge market for, you know, free and open third-party podcasting. Like, and especially for, you know, us like tech shows, even if they close down the podcast app one day, which they're never going to do, but, you know, even if they did, people would just migrate to third-party apps and it'd be fine. Like, I don't have any concerns about, like, the big companies destroying the podcasting industry. It's even in the best imaginations of what I feel that they could do, there's still going to be a demand for, you know, shows like ours, and maybe we'd have to change some things up, but in general, it seems like a pretty plain sailing. It's kind of like how you have some websites now that are paywalled and you have other sites like ours that just, you know, run on ads. Like, they can both coexist pretty happily.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And last thing, if we take a moment to pause, let's talk about Apple's always amazing Black Friday sale.
Yeah, if you rush out to your Apple Store from this Friday through Monday, which is obviously Cyber Monday, and you'll be able to get up to a $200 gift card on select Apple hardware. And the stress is very much an up to, because you look at previous years, you only get $200 off the very expensive stuff, and it might not even include Apple's latest products like AirPods Pro or the 16-inch MacBook Pro. And then cheaper stuff in the lineup gets like $50 gift cards or $100 gift cards. Yeah. And, you know, if you're buying something from the Apple Store, you might as well buy it on, you know, in the next, soon you might as well buy it in the next 4 days, you know, when the promotion's running, because you are going to get something you wouldn't otherwise. But if you're like hunting out for deals, you know, never buy at the Apple Store. Like any time of the year, you can basically buy the same product from Amazon and get $200 off a MacBook at any time of the year, like let alone in the holiday shopping season. So, you know, Apple's doing its usual. Here's these discounts. And we've seen that third-party retailers once again wipe the floor of them. Like Walmart's going to be selling the Apple Watch Series 3 for like $129, at least in some quantities, right, where it's normally $199. It's, you know, as always, if you're looking for deals, don't buy from the Apple Store.
Yeah, and what they show in the graphic is an iPhone that looks like it might be the 11 or it could be the XR. Can't tell. Maybe it's the Pro. Can't tell. It's just an icon. A MacBook that is probably the Air. Can't tell. And then an iPad that is not a Pro because it has bezels. And then an Apple Watch that is a Series 5. So surely those will be included. But that's just like the graphic. It's not, you know, the list of what's out there yet. So when we get to Friday, we should know by then, because it'll be live. Yep.
Yeah, but you can almost guarantee that you better get a better value somewhere else. Even today, like before, like last week or the week before, you can find better deals than what Apple will sell you, because, you know, they're the premium brand. They're not going to discount aggressively on their own website.
Yeah, our colleagues at 9to5 Toys, like Black Friday through Cyber Monday is like their Apple event, except it's not one day only, a few days out of the year. It's like, you know, getting longer and longer, and it's at least multiple days in a row around the holidays. So I'm not jealous of their work schedule, but if you are looking for competitive deals, they are on top of not just like what is on sale on Amazon right now, but also like creative deals where some online known vendor that you might not think of has a surprising deal that doesn't even look like it's you know, good for the company. So check them out at 9to5toys.com. You may have guessed that Benjamin is a developer, but I am not. But that doesn't mean my kids can't learn to code, thanks to Bitsbox. Bitsbox is an amazing service designed for kids aged 6 to 12 that sends you and your kids a special binder called the Apper Keeper, and inside you'll find easy-to-understand cards with fun subjects like animals and other characters. Bitsbox is a monthly subscription, so every month your child will receive new material for projects, and if your kids are like mine, they love to get mail of their own. Simply type in a 4-digit code on the Bitsbox website, then follow the instructions on the card for building fun and interactive apps that run on a virtual tablet in the web browser. Now, I can't stress enough that I am not a programmer, and I admit I was a bit intimidated when I thought about helping my daughter learn to code on her own, but Bitsbox makes learning to program extremely approachable with projects that are quick to complete and even physical stickers that your child can use to mark off completed projects in their Apper Keeper. And my daughter loves stickers, so it really is cool. All Bitsbox requires is a computer with a keyboard and the internet. Bitsbox notes that the coding part of the experience isn't meant to be done on tablets just yet, but you can totally play with the completed app on a phone or tablet after coding from a computer. And I'll share a tip here. My daughter has the new entry-level iPad and Apple Smart Keyboard. So I just had to test the new desktop class version of Safari on the iPad, and guess what? It totally works, exactly like on my Mac. In our experience, typing on the iPad Smart Keyboard was as easy as using my Mac, which I love. So if you're like me and want your kids to go even further than you with technology, Bitsbox is a fantastic way to get started and use iPads and Macs for more than just playing games and watching videos. Our listeners can get $25 off any Bitsbox subscription of $50 or more by going to bitsbox.com/happyhour and at checkout, enter promo code HAPPYHOUR. That's $25 off plus free shipping at bitsbox.com/happyhour and use code HAPPYHOUR for this exclusive offer. Order BitsBox today. Your kids will love coding and you'll gift them with an important skill that's necessary for a successful future. All right, Mio, sticking to the theme of the holidays and Thanksgiving, it's the few days before Thanksgiving as we record this, hopefully in time for people to listen to it on their drive to or from family or just on their time off. I wrote a column for my newspaper, Clarion Ledger, that will hopefully be up this week. But it's the subject of it is what I honestly thought like might be the Apple holiday ad this year, which is group FaceTime, because I think this is definitely like one of the bigger like holidays where you've got group FaceTime in the mix and like more devices that support it.
Yeah, because it just came out last Christmas time.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's more in the mainstream now on more devices and everything. And so the idea behind the story I wrote is that even if you travel somewhere for Thanksgiving or Christmas or whichever holiday you're celebrating or whatever traditions you have, oftentimes things happen where you can't be everywhere. Like you've got kids in college or you've got, two sides of the family and you can't go to both sides, or you've got like in-laws and you can't get to all, all those things happen. And so this is like the first, full year of having group FaceTime. And I actually had an experience back over the summer where my dad turned 50 and we had a dinner a few days afterwards. But on like the day he turned 50, I just like popped over for just a visit. It was his birthday and I gave him PowerBeats Pro and he loved those because he was using a combination of AirPods and like some Sony inner things. And I was like, this does both in one. But I went with my son and at the time he was one, and I had my iPad with me, and my sister lives in the same town, but she wasn't with us because it was just like an unscheduled visit. And then my brother and other sister live out of state, like hundreds of miles away. And so I thought, well, I'll just FaceTime call and see if they answer. And I think we actually like arranged it over iMessage first, just like, when will everybody be around? And then we waited and then it was like, okay, start the call now. And we did. And I just like handed my dad my iPad, not as a gift, but as like, here's a FaceTime call with people in different states, but it's like all of your kids. And then, I'm right over here too. And like for my sister in town, it was her and her husband and her baby. And then, for my sister out of state, it was like her and her husband and her baby. And then for my brother out of state, it was him and his wife. And then she was pregnant. And it was like all these people on just, only doing adding in like three more people on a FaceTime call. And then I was there in person, but it was like, he cheered up. Like that was the gift that I remember from his birthday, is like, whoa, group FaceTime is, it's a thing that we can like test its limits on, make sure it works and everything. And like, sometimes enjoy it for personal use. But like, that was the first moment for me where it hit me. And it was because it was like a holiday. Nobody, everyone couldn't be in town, for that day. And I just thought, even with Christmas this year, like I won't be able to get to, you just can't be in two places at once. So, it'll be true for Thanksgiving and Christmas where I will definitely use group FaceTime to sort of connect like multiple people in our family at the same time. And we can say, what we've done for the day and like what our plans are and that kind of thing. But just a moment to check in with everybody at the same time, where you might not do it on a random day throughout the year, but with the holidays, it's a perfect time to do that. And so, yeah, if you haven't thought about group FaceTime lately, I think that because it's still pretty new, that you can probably teach family about it for the first time. And if you haven't had a chance to use it and you know about it, obviously, then just take the holidays as a time to put it to good use.
Do you use FaceTime much in general?
Yeah, I do. And, partly with friends too, but, my main way to communicate is with iMessage. Like that's how you and I communicate most of the time.
Yep.
And then we do a Skype call and we do like video for a moment. And then we just go cut to audio for the recording for the highest like internet quality and bandwidth and everything. But, I've got friends who will call on the phone sometimes, because they're driving or something and they want to, vent or, make plans or something. And, lately, not even on my like part, but they've started to use FaceTime, and so I use FaceTime, and then it makes it like feel way better than a phone call. And with my family, like if it's someone that I will rarely call. It's either iMessage or FaceTime, and like to call, it's like got to be because I can't use FaceTime at the moment. Like I'm on my watch or something. But yeah, my family is big into FaceTime. And a lot of times for me, it's that I spent a whole day writing with 9to5 Mac, and I will receive an iMessage from like my aunt, and it'll be like, what are our plans for Thanksgiving? And do you want to do this? And what time is this? And it's like five or six questions in one message. And I can go through and like write up, you know, an article in response to her, or I can FaceTime and just like, you know, effortlessly say. And she uses dictation a lot. And I see a lot of people, especially older people in my family, who rely on dictation because it's easier than typing for them. But for me, I don't like dictation because I don't trust it enough. I think it can be more fiddly than it's worth.
You can type fast.
Yeah, I can type faster. But if I don't feel like typing, you know, even without a keyboard in front of me, like a physical keyboard, then I will do FaceTime. And I think the context too of like what you're doing and your environment and everything, there's not a lot of times where I can't take a FaceTime call, but I can take a phone call. So yeah, I do use FaceTime a lot. In group FaceTime, not a whole lot because it requires more people and like the need to use that. But for the holidays, it's perfect.
Yeah. For our family, we tend to just use like, obviously everyone texts and iMessage and stuff, but FaceTime is definitely like, generally off limits for holidays, birthdays, that kind of thing. Like, if funnily enough, only this week I actually used FaceTime to talk to my dad because we were like talking about some like electrics thing, and I like showed him the circuit or whatever, and we were like talking through it like that. So that was actually like one of the first times it came up in my head. I was actually using this, you know, outside of like a celebration type of situation.
But,
yeah, you know, there's nothing. FaceTime's a cool feature, and I think a lot gets said about like I'm iPhone lock in thanks to iMessage, but I think FaceTime is pretty popular. And you know, there must be a decent segment of people who also have the, oh, I'm not leaving the iPhone because, you know, I FaceTime with X, X, and X.
Yeah, I sold my MacBook Pro over the weekend, and the guy who bought it was a dad with a 13-year-old daughter, and he was divorced. And so his daughter would go between houses every other weekend. And he told me that he's not an Apple guy. The computer was for his daughter, but he only had an iPhone because she would use FaceTime. And he didn't have an iPhone. And even though you can do things like, you know, all the different messaging apps, you know, Messenger, whatever else, then it's just not as built in and easy, you know, especially for kids, as FaceTime. And you don't have to have like, you know, a Facebook account. And so he has an iPhone because of FaceTime for that reason.
Yeah, there was something really interesting. There's a stat that really stood out to me. There was a congressional hearing in like July, and Apple released their like notes for it last week. Mm-hmm. And part of it was basically about like anti-competitive behavior and stuff. So they were talking about the App Store, and they did a breakdown of like the most popular app categories and about how their apps compete. And then they had little like blurbs for each category. And under FaceTime, it said competing video chat apps have been downloaded billions of times on the App Store. Like, and you know, they had messaging and they had other stuff, and they were all saying, you know, they are a highly popular competition, highly little. And then it got to like the video section, and it was like, Apple offers FaceTime. Competing apps like Facebook Messenger and WhatsApp and blah, 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 have been downloaded billions of times. Like, clearly, even if people only use it, like, I don't know what the average usage of FaceTime is. Obviously, it's not every single day, right? And it's probably still, and you know, texting is by far number one. But if you look at like people who do traditional phone calls versus FaceTime, I don't know where the ratio comes in there. But clearly, people download it and use it, and even if it's only, you know, spread a few times across the year. But video chat in general is very, very popular, like overall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's just a shame that Apple continues to ship such bad webcams in its laptops.
Yeah, that's a hard thing. So anyone with iOS 12.1.4 or later can do group FaceTime. And on the Mac, it's Mac OS Mojave 10.14.3 or later.
And group FaceTime is really, really good. I've only used it a handful of times. The only big issue that I have with group FaceTime is that it seems to like burn the battery quite a lot. Like your phone gets quite hot and stuff.
Yeah.
It's even more so than like normal FaceTime does. But apart from that, it's fine. And you don't, when I've only done group FaceTime with like, I think five people maximum, but you can obviously go up to what, 32?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it doesn't show everyone on the screen at once. It kind of like goes in this like carousel thing. So
yeah,
you can kind of focus the conversation. And especially when it spirals out to so many people, you'll start having like connection issues with some people and stuff. But that's part of the beauty of the way that Apple did it, is that you can basically just, those people just get shuffled off screen essentially. So only the people that are like actively talking are visible while it's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like maybe up to a dozen based on the screen size and the device, like when it came out. And then there's also like a subset of devices that can run the software of can run iOS 12, but it's not good enough for group FaceTime video. I think iPhone 6, SE, and 5S are like the iPhones in that camp. And then like the sixth generation iPod Touch.
Like the iPad Air, because my sister has the iPad, but she can't do group FaceTime.
Yeah, and the Mini 2 and 3. And like they have iOS 12, even if they don't get iOS 13, but they can still do group FaceTime, but only as audio. So what is it that they can contribute? They can contribute audio only. And they can't see video either, right? Because it's too
intensive. Yeah, they can't see it. They literally join as like audio only. Yeah. It's like FaceTime audio for them, for those clients.
Yeah. And I discovered like through, you know, researching this and like making sure that everything that I assumed was actually correct. On Apple's support site for group FaceTime, related to the Mac specifically, they don't like tell you how it works on every single Mac, but they have this funny line as like a sub bullet, which is like FaceTime displays up to 4 or 9 live video tiles at the same time, depending on your Mac model. The most active 4 or 9 speakers display video tiles while other participants display is ! So that's 4 or 9. It's one or the other, depending on your Mac model. So it runs Mojave, but if it's older, 4. If it's newer, 9. I wonder what the cutoff is there. Like processor wise. Yeah. So yeah, group FaceTime. I think it is it's the perfect time of year to try it out if you haven't yet, and to teach people about it. So
yeah, and it has nice integration into iMessage as well. Like if you have an iMessage group chat,
mm-hmm.
and you start the FaceTime from there, it just puts a little bubble in the face in the iMessage conversation which says, you know, FaceTime call active, 4 people join now, and you can just kind of tap in and join and then fall out when you want. It's not like the one-to-one FaceTime call where you have to like actively call someone and then wait for them to answer and stuff. You can be a bit more like ad hoc about it. So if you do have like a, you know, an iMessage family of, you know, 10, 20 people, and you mm-hmm. just start talking to, you know, 3 of them with group FaceTime, other people can join in if they want to. Like, it's a nice casual, you know, way of catching up to people.
Yeah, and you can, I guess you started from 2 ways besides iMessage, which is you just go to make a call, you put in the number of, like, the contacts, and then that's a group FaceTime call. But you can also convert a one-on-one call to group FaceTime, and then you go from, like, the full-screen video experience to becoming little squares, even if it's just 2 because the third person doesn't answer. But as long as the call is active, even the one-on-one call that became, like, the square version of it, it's persistent as a notification on their device until you hang up, and then it goes away. And it's like, I guess it's a missed call then. But as long as the call is ongoing, then they can tap on the alert and then join in. So yeah, it's, it had that funny thing where, was it delayed or disabled for a bit? What happened? I forget now.
So this was January. Like, that feels so long ago now.
Yeah.
But yeah, January, there was the security bug where the other.
Oh, this is the game thing.
The other person could answer while you were. The other person could make you pick up the phone without you picking up the phone, right?
The Fortnite kid found it, right?
Yeah. And then we shared it first, and it blew up. If you actually remember,
yeah, you shared it first.
And it blew up, it first, and it absolutely exploded. But yeah, that's crazy. That feels like so long ago, but that was January. Yeah, and basically the other person could make you join the call without you actually pressing yes, and so that was pretty bad. And it was disabled for like a week before they, you know, fixed the servers and made old devices not connect to it anymore, and, you know, pushed the upgrades forward.
Yeah, but it's for the rest of this year, it's been fine.
Oh, and apart from when you had the nice little bug from walkie talkie as well.
Yeah, apart from that,
which is based on the FaceTime standard.
Yeah, we'll have our year in review soon, I guess. A lot of material.
We need to do like a decade in review.
Oh man, are we old enough for
that? I've been thinking about doing a post about that, like Apple over the 2010s.
Well, that's part of it. So we're about to be in 2020. FaceTime came out in 2010, right? It was the iPhone 4?
Yeah, it's literally a full circle.
Yeah, wow. And this is like the first, I mean, and not to get too nostalgic here, but it was Wi-Fi only
mm-hmm.
for the like until the 4S. And then you could
do it
on
cellular.
Until the 5, then you could do it on cellular. That's crazy. When you could do Skype one-on-one on cellular, it was... they made it. What did they back? They made it work on cellular, but the 4 never could, and the 4S could. Is that right?
Yeah, and it was limited by Carrier as well. You had to get Carrier support.
Yeah.
That's a huge fandangle. This week, Happy Hour is brought to you by Hyper. In case you didn't know, although how could you not really, this week is Black Friday, and Hyper is partnering with 95Mac and the Happy Hour podcast to bring you their Hyper Black Friday sale early. Hyper makes incredible accessories for Apple users. If you remember a few weeks back, we talked about their new HyperDrive hubs. Well, they also make the world's smallest 100-watt gallium nitride charger, super strong MFI lightning cables, USB-C battery packs, and so much more. I'm a big fan of their iPad Pro USB-C dock, which aligns perfectly with the side of the iPad and provides an SD card slot, standard USB-A ports, HDMI, and more in a single adapter. It's a great choice if you're looking to use your iPad like in more traditional laptop and productivity settings. Happy Hour listeners can access the Hyper Black Friday sale in advance and get 30% off site-wide. Just use promo code HYPER30 at checkout to get your discount. With 30% off, you can get the HyperDrive Duo for under $50 or the 11-in-1 HyperDrive Ultimate for $79.99. Check out all of their deals and promotions at hypershop.com. That's hypershop.com and use promo code HYPER30 at checkout. HYPER and the number 30. If you're buying for yourself or looking for a gift for an Apple lover this holiday season, check out Hyper and use promo code HYPER30 for 30% off your order. Thanks to Hyper for sponsoring Happy Hour.
And then another topic I want to bring this week to the show is Apple Watch for kids as an experiment. And I will definitely write about this somewhere at some point. But I've mentioned on this podcast before, I think with you, that I wanted to have a way to, and maybe it was more in depth on Watch Time podcast, but in the neighborhood I live in now, it's safe enough for the kids to go out, like my daughter to go out and play in the road with the kids and everything, and like go to their houses and ride bikes and scooters and everything. But I've got a kid at home, so I can't watch her and watch him and be in two places at once, of course. So I have to trust her and I can't trust the world, so it makes me nervous. And so I finally caved, and I thought, she's not old enough for a cell phone. She's not old enough for a watch, an Apple Watch, in terms of like what I've seen from being like my experience growing up and like what I don't have a lot of friends with kids her age. They're probably a lot younger, but it just seems like it's probably too soon. But there was this deal for the Apple Watch Series 3 38mm with cellular for $199, which is the price of the model without cellular usually. So, you can go $129 for Black Friday and get a 38mm without cellular, but that wouldn't interest me because the main thing that I want here is to have cellular. And so we've been doing this thing where there was one night where she came home after dark and I was very worried, and like me and my son went out in the car to look for her and her scooter, and she was just down the street at a friend's house, but she lost track of time and it got dark and I was very worried and I had no way to communicate with her or track her. I considered walkie talkies, but I'm like, if I'm going to make the investment, I just want to go all the way and do the thing that I actually want to do for me, not even for her. And that is have her wear an Apple Watch with LTE. And so it came. The catch is it has to have an iPhone. It can be any iPhone that is compatible with the software. So I guess if you can't run iOS 13, you can't buy an Apple Watch with watchOS 6 because they've got to be compatible. But I did buy a new iPhone. That is part of her Christmas this year. She doesn't know it exists, and she doesn't know that you have to have an iPhone. So she has just the Apple Watch and her iPod and her iPad. But from the like parent experience, it was no issue for me to set up the Apple Watch, do all that from the iPhone that she doesn't even know exists, and then have her wear the watch. And then this is where I wanted to say, like, don't underestimate what kids can do with technology compared to what we expect. Because even when I first had the Apple Watch, like writing a review about it, it took me several days to realize that you can tap the screen to turn it on without clicking a button, raising your wrist, or that kind of thing. That you can tap the screen, it will come on. And she discovered all of that and much more in the first hour of wearing the watch. Like, she had a total understanding of like how you get to alerts, how you get to control center, how you get to apps.
But she, to be fair, she has seen you use your watch for 5 years now.
No, she sees me wear one, but she doesn't see me use it. Like, that's different.
You know, auxiliary osmosis, that kind of thing.
I don't know. I mean,
the kids are very smart. If you gave her the Apple Watch in 2015, it wouldn't have the same vocabulary. Like, it's just crazy what you like learn indirectly.
Yeah. Anyway, she there were like no. Like, she would ask a question of how to do something, but she knew that she could do that. It was really cool.
Yeah.
She had like the right expectations for it and everything. And there was one thing where the sport band was too big. You know, the watch is actually like the perfect size for her wrist. It looks big on it. It's a big watch anyway. But she had like a kid's smartwatch with a camera on it, and it's smaller than that thing was. That was like a VTech toy kind of thing. And we switched to the Sport Loop because we had one extra laying around, and that one she can, you know, make tight enough to stay on the wrist and not like rotate around, and that was perfect. I was concerned about the cellular battery life without having a phone with it most of the time. And that worked out just fine. The having Wi-Fi at home helps there. And then also like the phone that she doesn't know exists is also like in the house. So when she's home, it can connect to that and not, even rely on the Wi-Fi. But so far, no issues there with battery life. And it's because it's such low use, you know. And the main thing that I want from it is just to see where she is. And the phone, like my wife's idea was like, just do the phone, don't do the watch yet, because it would be cheaper that way. But I don't think she'll keep up with the phone the same way as the watch, like take it everywhere with her. And I don't want her to anyway. Like, I think
for a kid, like the watch is just so much better because it's, you know, strapped to your wrist. You're not going to be able to lose it or leave it anywhere. Mm-hmm. And like
if she goes ride her bike or her scooter, she's not going to have that phone with her.
Yeah. You know? Or you put it in your, you know, you put it somewhere and it falls out. Like, it's such like, you know, the watch screen gets smashed, but like the phone can get lost, like much more preeminently than, you know, some damage.
Yeah. And so she's taken to like charging nightly. It's been no problem there. She could probably last a few days with it without charging it, you know, based on her usage. But for me,
do you know what watch face she uses?
I set up 2 for her. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And she discovered the second one without me showing her in the swiping gesture to get between faces. All of that she knows. But One of the things is that I wanted her to have, whatever's on Series 3, that's like the digital watch face with a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, modular, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All the different watch faces are running together now. But what I did was, she's got the time, obviously. She's got a complication for sunset and sunrise because of sunrise is time to come, or sunset is time to come inside, you know, and it changes throughout the year. And she's a kid, and she might not look at the sky if she's inside and like realize it's time to come home. But now she can look at her watch, and it's worked so far, and she can see when sunset is today, and that's when to come home. And the good thing about that is like sunset isn't darkness yet. It's like when the sun's going down and like is at that horizon point. So that's been really cool. And then she's got 3 complications for favorite contacts. And so it's a picture of me, a picture of her mom, and a picture of her grandma. And she can tap those, and then it shows phone, messaging, walkie-talkie, which is really cool, and I think like FaceTime audio. And so she taps the face, and then she can get in there. I showed her about holding down the side button to call 911 if there's an emergency. And so like, we got really close to calling, you know, I showed her from my watch on how to do that. And she was like, did you just call 911? I was like, no, it takes, five alarm beeps. So, but she knows about that. She knows how to call me in an emergency. And then the other complication, I forget which one we ended up using. Maybe heart rate, because she's very curious about her heart rate with like exercise, and that's just based on like her seeing me. So so it's gone really well so far. The thing with location is that if she's wearing the watch away from the iPhone, is on her wrist unlocked, then Find My Friends works for that, including the alerts like left school, arrived at school, and that's really cool. But she can't wear the watch in class. It has to go in her backpack. So when she gets on the bus, she wears the watch because she loves it, and then it goes in her backpack. And then when she gets back on the bus, she takes it out of her backpack and like puts it on her wrist. And Find My Friends, you know, that level of location sharing requires the watch to be on the wrist. But then through Find My iPhone, or what used to be called my iPhone, Find My Devices, And family sharing, I can find her watch even if she's not wearing it. So if it's in her backpack. So it's, that makes me glad that the Find My app is all one thing now, because yeah. I wouldn't be jumping between apps based on what she's, you know, if she's wearing it or not. And then I can see, well, she's at the school or the, like, I had an alert on for when she left school for the first day, just to like get an, like just to test it out. And I got the alert whenever she went to the playground, because it was like far enough from the school building that it triggered it. But I was happy that it worked. And then, yeah, like I said before, I am just amazed at how kids master technology just like within minutes, because like I mentioned, the second face she found on her own, I set it up for her, but she didn't know, cause I did it from the iPhone, and I did a Minnie Mouse face with, the two complications as her mom and me, and then the bottom complication, I forget what I did, but and so she loves that. She knows about muting it and unmuting it, and she tapped through every single mode in Control Center and to like to see what it does, and she asked me like, what does this icon do? And then she showed me like, hey, the watch is stuck in this water mode. I was like, oh, you gotta spin the crown to get past that. And she went to the movies with her watch on, and she knew to do theater mode when she saw Frozen 2. Funny. So, yeah, I, as like the Apple Watch guy, I am just so proud, and I'm so at ease, you know. And that's the funny thing is, like, it does require an iPhone, but you can get like a used iPhone that you never even give a kid if you want, and it can be like really cheap. You've got to have a plan for the phone. So that's an expense, and you've got to have a data plan for the watch. That's an expense. Hopefully one day that gets cleaned up. And it would be nice to say, like, I'm in family sharing with my daughter. Let me set up a watch from my phone through hers.
Yeah, like, you don't need it to be synced to your phone. You just need like a flyby config, like set up this little like beacon watch almost for, you know, for my kid to use, that maybe, you know, you don't necessarily have to buy a brand new watch. It could be your hand-me-down or whatever else. Like, and it doesn't have to ping back to the phone. It could just like independently receive, you know, calls and texts and stuff and data. That'd be like, that'd be so good if they could somehow figure that out. And maybe it would be like, you have to have an active plan. Like, you, the parent, has to have an active phone and watch plan, but then you can add like a second watch, like, you know, like a kid's watch on for a lesser fee and stuff. Like, there's a lot of space there that is just completely undesigned at this moment, and you have to do stupid hacks like keeping an extra phone at home permanently, just plugged in or whatever, even if you don't give it to them.
Yeah.
Whereas if they could have some like drive-by config, pair and sync, basically, and then you just leave it and it never talks to the phone again, that'd be ideal. Because they already do the thing where if you have multiple watches, it can automatically switch between them. And what you would need here is almost less complicated than that. Like, you just want it, you bring it up to the phone, you can type in the login information, and then you can go away, and maybe, you know, you can come back later and configure it again. But day to day, it doesn't need to talk to the phone at all. It just becomes independent, and that is good for kids, but it also could just be good for adults as well.
I think it's probably more likely that we see the Apple Watch just like a standalone device that you can activate on its own, use with iPhone if you want to, use with the Android with like limited features. But, you know, because that's a wider net to cast than just the kids version. But if like resources were endless and you could just snap a finger and make it, that would be the really like a killer feature to have in the meantime. But I think that they'll probably invest in the bigger net approach. All right, Mayo, a few more things before we head off for the holidays this week. And the first thing is about the Apple Card. Remember that? Apple's credit card. They've got a new deal with a new company that is just part of their expanding their benefits. So what's new with Apple Card this week?
Yeah, so obviously they've been expanding the 3% cashback thing with like T-Mobile and Uber and Walgreens. And then this week they've added Nike. So again, Apple Pay purchases from Nike retail stores, Nike app. They say it's coming soon to Nike.com. will qualify for 3% cashback. It's interesting that they keep expanding this like partner groups. Like, it's basically a rate of like one a month at the moment, it feels like, but they're getting pretty, you know, esteemed brands to join up. And this is something that they did not signal they were going to do at all when the Apple Card was first introduced in March. Like, it was kind of a surprise when they did Uber when it first came out, and they, you know, been quite aggressively adding partners. So I think it's a, you know, obviously it's a nice bonus for people. The Apple Card in general has been doing pretty well. Like, I think Apple even said it's the most successful credit card launch ever. Although, obviously, that's for the individual card, and most other credit card providers have different tiers, different plans and stuff, and Apple gets an advantage because it's all just one card at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
They obviously have a lot of way to go on feature set, like, with the Apple Card, whether that's, like, joint accounts or, you know, exporting to Mint and stuff like that. But just adding partners is a nice bonus for people that have it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking at Nike's website now, so I might have spaced out for a moment, but...
Well, yeah, we should say you are you are an Apple fan, but you're also very much a Nike fan, so...
Yeah, I've got a... Yeah, I buy a lot of shoes and try a lot of shoes. I think this what you said is interesting to me because I don't know that on the website that they support Apple Pay yet, and that would be the holdup.
Yeah, and at the bottom of the press release thing, it said Nike.com coming soon for Apple Pay.
Yeah, they do have Apple Pay now. I don't know how new that is, but they do have Apple Pay now at least. So they've got what they need there for the card to work. So that's cool. Yeah, I don't just run exclusively Nike shoes. I've also got a pair of Hoka One One shoes that are nice. But yeah, I'm a fan of the Nike. So this is a, you know, in addition to having the Apple Watch, Nike Plus be a thing that exists between the two companies. Also, Tim Cook is what he's got, like, a some role in the board, right? So he's friends with Nike as well.
Yep.
So you'll see him wearing all Nike all the time. And aside from that, there is a new app out that our friends at Mac Stories covered in a review called Metapho. And it's not a new app, but they have a new version out. And what I found interesting that we recently covered on Undefined Mac as well is that the app is all about viewing EXIF metadata from a photo taken on the iPhone or any camera for that matter, and letting you see that on the iPhone. Whereas, like, photos on the Mac has it, the iPhone doesn't have it built in. Metaphoto or Metapho does. But the new thing is that they will show you if your phone has used Deep Fusion on the 11 Pro and 11 Pro Max, something that you can't see otherwise. The bad news is that it's going away. So the feature
obviously relies on a private implementation detail of how the photos are saved. Apple intentionally does not offer a way for a developer of an app to find out whether a photo was taken with Deep Fusion or not, because they don't want people making apps like this, really. And it's going to, I think even on 13.3 beta, it already doesn't work. Like, new photos taken with 13.3 beta, I think it's already problematico. Because obviously with the iPhone 11 series, especially, Apple is trying to distance its camera technology from any specific, like, branding implementation. Like, you don't have a label for HDR anymore. There's no label for night mode when you're in the Photos app. Like, obviously it has a night mode button when you're taking the picture, but when it's taken, you look back at it, there's nothing that directly says this was shot using night mode specifically. And also there's nothing for Deep Fusion. There's no logos or anything like that. Because I think what's going to happen is over time, Apple's going to keep adding these different wet processing pipelines for photo taking. And they're going to, like, do what they do now, but to even bigger degree, where depending on the certain situations, they switch between each one. So at the moment, you get, like, Deep Fusion in medium, or you're supposed to get Deep Fusion in, like, medium to low light situations, though, as we've seen using the app, it comes into fire more often. But there is a transition point when you're in really, really good light that it only uses smart HDR. And that kind of, like, cycling between different things based on the properties of the environment, I think what we're going to see, you know, not necessarily with the iPhone 11, but, you know, with the 12, 13 and into the future, is they're just going to keep piling on various different stacks of technologies that help make pictures good in each situation. And it would just be untenable if they started having labels for every single one of them. Like, Deep Fusion got a lot of hype because it became, like, the big keynote segment, and they obviously, you know, hyped it up as computational mad science, blah, 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 blah. But realistically, it is not a customer-facing technology. It's an implementation detail. And if Deep Fusion had been able to be released day and date with the iPhone series, so, like, in September, I don't think they would have ever branded it. They just said, look at our incredible camera system, and this is what we do. We use computational mad science to do this and this. They just had to give it a name because they wanted to hype it up, but it wasn't actually coming out until, you know, a month or two afterwards.
Yep. From the Mac Stories coverage, they say that it's the app can detect night mode based on the number of images composited, and that Deep Fusion relies on the integer value return when the camera takes a shot with the flash turned off, which is different than the value you return when the deep frame Deep Fusion is not triggered. So, but that's the thing that's going away, is that whatever is exposed there won't be anymore. So that's too bad. But I did go through using the app and looked at like whenever Deep Fusion update first came out, the photos that I'd taken then. And, you know, you could kind of guess that like this is probably one that would apply, and then see, oh, it is. There were some random shots that I took just for like note taking, you know, sake. And those were as well, but you know, you just got really cool looking notes, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, you could sort of guess at which ones were and were not. It made a lot of sense there. But it was neat to see, it actually kicked in then, you know, versus just guessing. But yeah, it's just a short term thing for now. And, I think I mentioned before, but I've been using the option to capture outside of the frame.
Yeah.
Have it on, which doesn't work with Deep Fusion, but at least it's like I don't see. So something you said that was smart to me was that even with the pictures that I knew now were Deep Fusion photos, what we don't have is a comparison of how they would have looked otherwise without Deep Fusion in the software.
Yeah, and yes, Deep Fusion does make the textures nicer, but it is subtle, right? Like, yeah. It is not two different situations. Like, when you have night mode on, you're taking a picture versus you're just taking a picture in plain darkness, or even taking a picture with a flash on. They're very clearly different pictures each time. And this is why Deep Fusion isn't a UI surfaced thing, because it is subtler and is just meant to, you know, slip in there and help, right? Like, it's
you can identify what is an HDR photo based on like, oh, the sky is washed out there, or no, the sky is the same as the subject, you know. Those are identified by the eye. But it's much harder for Deep Fusion. And like you mentioned before, I think the overall branding for like a photo taken on an iPhone is like shot with iPhone. And all the other modes, to name them, is like to set up someone to copy them. And even before we had they marketed HDR as a thing. Like, that was Steve Jobs era. And, but they were always doing every year, like, new computational features. They didn't have a name. And so this just follows that pattern. Yeah.
They just awkwardly had to have a name for a temporary period of time.
Yeah. But I'm quite sold on the value of having the capture out of the frame thing happening.
And obviously this is a good example. Like, next year or whenever the hardware can support it, they'll have capture outside the frame and Deep Fusion active at the same time.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
They don't want to make any like promises or show any UI at the moment, because it's all just in flux and they could change it out on a whim. Like, theoretically in 13.4, they could have a whole new photo processing pipeline and again not name it. And, you know, you just at some point see better pictures being taken. But the fact that the Deep Fusion just got like railed on for the big brand name and the big build up, but you know, it's just a continuation, incremental improvement in making iPhone photography better.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Metaphor is still useful for all the other EXIF data that it can capture. Yep. Including like before, the Photos app included the ability to share without the metadata, like, or I guess location is what it has. You can share without that information and maybe like rip all of it. So it's still got
which use, I wish utility. The actual Apple Photos app would do, because it does it on the Mac, but the iOS version of Photos does not have like the little EXIF data panel.
Yeah. So there's still utility in that. And then finally for the week on the photo train, Jeff Benjamin did an awesome both written and video review of the new iPhone 11 smart battery case, now with the camera shortcut. And I really wanted to see that, because like my reason for buying one would be to try out the camera button and just answer a curiosity of how does it work. And his video sufficed. You know, he's like, it's a button, it's recessed, so it's not out, so you're less likely like to trigger it in your pocket. You hold it down for about a second and then it launches the camera app, and then you hold it down to take a picture, or hold it and keep holding it down to take a quick quick take video in 4:3 ratio at 1080p. So that suffices. But if anyone's like me and they just, you know, they don't really need one of these for battery purposes, but they're curious about it being new this year, check out Jeff Benjamin's video review on youtube.com/905Mac. And we'll have it linked in the show notes as well. But I watched that and it satisfied my need to, be exposed to this. So, and it's also, you know, a cool review. It's much more than just that, but,
yeah, it's a good video from Jeff.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, we mentioned it before, but that button kind of answers the question of like, what is that case for now? And then I hadn't thought about this, but you know, with the volume rocker as a shutter button, I've used that for a long time, like since what was it, like 4S or so, as a thing. And maybe it doesn't make a big difference, but to do that as a shutter button, to feel like a camera at least, you kind of want to have the volume buttons facing up. So if you're holding it in landscape, the volume buttons are in the left top. And then the camera's on the bottom, and then you can get it like the picture will look different if you flip it around the other way. And then it's more like what you see with a camera where like the lens is higher up than lower down. So this is designed to be like, if you're holding it with the camera in the top corner, not the bottom corner, then you get that different perspective. And then the buttons on the right top where you kind of expect it to be. So obviously they all work in like whatever orientation, but just in terms of like how I hold the camera, like lens in the top left corner, this is a different button than volume and power. So I'm not going to accidentally turn it off. And then it's up there like with the, you know, as like its own thing. I wish it was on the iPhone because I don't need the battery case and I would benefit from this on the iPhone. Maybe someday. So even if it's just like a pressure sensitive, like weren't there rumors of like pressure sensitive buttons that didn't stick out at some point?
Yeah, they were.
Yeah. Yeah. I would take that. It's like this part of the phone, you squeeze it and it does something, you know? So anyway, that is the Happy Hour podcast for this week. We will be back with a new episode next week that we'll talk about my new MacBook Pro 16-inch and what I did to get to it and what I think about it and how I will be using it. So tune in for that next week. In the meantime, enjoy your holiday, and we will be back next week. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Apollo Zach on Twitter and Instagram. That's APOLLOZAC. Benjamin, you're on Twitter at
BZA Mayo.
For now, until you get the freed up Twitter handles that we learned about today, maybe. We had a whole conversation about that, too, before the show. If you have any feedback for the show, you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. That will go to both my inbox and Benjamin's inbox. And I love the feedback. You know, if you've got a question about anything on the show, you have a recommendation for the show, we really enjoy that. A question that you want us to answer on the show, you can send it there. And finally, we will be back next week again. So see everybody later. Bye.
Bye-bye.